live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
You're watching the Young Turks. Welcome. I'm Anna Kasparian, and joining us today is John Iadarola, host of the Damage Report, which, by the way, you can also follow on TikTok. Not a big deal. I think you might be the only show on our network that's on TikTok right now. So there it is at the Damage Report. Please follow it. And John, how are you doing?
I'm good. And you know what? We may be the only one now, but at some point you're going to be, I don't know, flossing or something on TikTok. We're gonna make it happen. But anyway, no, I'm good. Happy to be here. The news is crazy. People are terrible. It's a normal day in America.
It is a normal day in America. Little bit of a positive update. The House has voted in favor of passing Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. Now it will head to Biden's desk where he's sure to sign it. So that's the positive update. But we have some other fun stories to share with you, starting with Katie Porter.
Please don't patronize me by telling me that the oil and gas industry doesn't have any special tax provisions. Because if you would like that to be the rule, I would be happy to have Congress deliver.
We love to see it. That was Representative Katie Porter from California, grilling an oil executive by the name of Mark Murphy. Now, Mark Murphy has a fossil fuel company based in New Mexico. And what he was trying to argue there was that, you know, the oil and gas industry doesn't get any special treatment by the federal government, but you might want to temper your lies a little bit, especially when you're spreading them in front of members of Congress who would know a little bit about just how much these companies get subsidized. Here's Katie Porter going after him in more context.
They're estimated to be between 60 to 90% of the cost of drilling. How much of those intangible drilling costs do you get to deduct right away from your taxes?
We get to deduct all of those just like any other business. We do not.
How much do you get to deduct?
There seems to be a misconception out there that you're operating from, that somehow the oil and gas industry benefits from some special sort of tax structure. We don't. We actually.
Reclaiming my time, Mr. Murphy.
Other industries, right?
I will follow up with you, Mr. Murphy, but you do benefit from special rules. There's a special tax rule for intangible drilling costs that does not apply to other kinds of expenses that businesses have. You get to deduct 70% of your costs immediately, and other businesses have to amortize their expenses over their entire profit stream.
We also
have please don't patronize me by telling me that the oil and gas industry doesn't have any special tax provisions. Because if you would like that to be the rule, I would be happy to have Congress deliver. I yield back.
Now, if you enjoy watching members of Congress actually do their jobs, you can expect a lot more of that coming from Representative Katie Porter, because she's just been named the chair of the House Natural Resources Subcommittee on Oversight. She also serves on the Energy and Mineral Resources and the Public Lands and National Parks Subcommittees. So she is placing a lot of emphasis on holding these types of companies accountable, ensuring that the companies that pollute our air and our water have to pay for that. And I'll give you some details later about the legislation that she's put forward in response to all of this. But before I do, John, how much do you love watching Katie Porter grill people like this?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was the threat at the end, especially. It was clever. It was delivered forcefully. I did like it. It has a very like you've been trying to get one over on the teacher vibe that entire interaction. And her response yes. played into that as well in the best possible way. I guess he just didn't know. I guess he didn't know that they had these special tax breaks.
Like, how imagine. Could he?
Who do you think you're talking to, like Marjorie Taylor Greene? Like, that she's not gonna have done the research. Yeah, I think Katie Porter is gonna have a good idea of what you're gonna be talking about at the hearing. And even for people who don't know, like I didn't know that particular detail, that they had that particular formulation of a way to deduct their expenses. But I would assume that after a century plus of like massive amounts of campaign donations, they're probably getting something. I think if they were getting nothing over and above other industries, then they've been probably overpaying for the last few decades. So it's just such a stupid thing to say, but one has to assume that he doesn't feel particularly threatened, that he feels like even with the Democrats taking over, it's unlikely that this sort of situation would change. He doesn't seem like a person who thinks that they're on the cusp of losing access to these special perks and things like that.
Right. I mean, they haven't really had to deal with any, I guess, difficult policy aimed at them, aimed to, you know, of course, protect the environment and ensure that they're paying their fair share. And so that gets me to what Representative Porter is proposing in Congress. And it's certainly a lot more detailed than what we've seen before from members of Congress who at least pay lip service to those who want to do something about these fossil fuel companies. Common Dreams writes that Katie Porter is the lead sponsor of, and I love the way that this is titled, Ending Taxpayer Welfare for Oil and Gas Companies Act, legislation introduced last week that would, according to a summary from the California Congresswoman's office, raise royalties, rental rates, inspection fees, and penalties on oil and gas companies that extract resources from public lands. I went ahead and read a little more about this policy, and here are some bullet points that you should be aware of. For instance, it would implement onshore royalty rates raised from 12.5% to 18.75%, onshore oil and gas minimum bid raised from $2 to $5 and indexed to inflation, and per acre onshore rental rates raised from their current values of $1.50 for the first 5 years and $2 for the second 5 years to $3 for the first 5 years and $5 for the second 5 years. It's important to keep in mind that this is the first time that royalties have increased for the fossil fuel industry in over 100 years. I'm not even exaggerating. So this is obviously a departure from the fecklessness that we've seen from Congress so far in response to fossil fuel companies. And I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can only speak for myself, but I've been pushing for a per acre on share rental rate rise for literally years at this point. And so it's good to see it finally coming. That obviously goes far beyond my knowledge in this area. But that's why it's important to have people like Katie Porter. Yet another major distinction that is lost when people try to compare the recent influx over the past few years of progressive congresspeople to the troglodytes and monsters that the right has elected in the last year. The difference is knowledge, actual desire, curiosity to understand the subject matter, and the quick thinking ability to deploy it in settings like we just saw.
And you know, there is a risk, let's just be clear. There is a risk in increasing fees and taxes on the fossil fuel industry because, you know, an argument can be made that when you do that, they could leave the country. These job creators could leave the country and go create jobs somewhere else. Except no, that would literally be impossible, right? So
well, you need a very long tube at least.
Exactly. And you know, the one other thing I just want to note is the manipulation that takes place in order to ensure that gas prices are high is ridiculous. Like OPEC comes in and tells countries stop producing. Stop producing because we want to artificially inflate the value of oil and gas. And so they get all sorts of goodies and benefits. You know, you'll hear from these so-called free market warriors argue that we need as little regulation as possible. We don't have to worry about taxing them too much because they're going to send jobs overseas. In reality, these are people who have gotten all sorts of handouts from our federal government who get to manipulate manipulate the market to their benefit. And it just feels really good to hear a lawmaker demanding that they pay their fair share and get treated like everyone else gets treated when it comes to paying taxes and fees.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to this weird moment of clarity for Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says that the Democratic Party actually made a giant mistake in attempting to appease Republicans during the Obama administration. Let's hear more of what he had to say.
Some Senate Republicans did meet with President Biden early on, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney. Could more have been done to get some of them on board?
No, we made a big mistake in 2009 and 10. Susan Collins was part of that mistake. We cut back on the stimulus dramatically, and we stayed in recession for 5 years. What was offered by the Republicans was so far away from what's needed, so far away from what Biden proposed, that he thought that they were not being serious in wanting to really negotiate.
Are you hopeful Republicans will join Democrats on anything, or Democrats will join Republicans on anything in the near future?
Well, I always say we want to work with Republicans where we can, but we have to get big, bold change done, and that is our number one priority. I, have a hope. I'm always an optimist. You know that, Anderson, that now that Republicans have seen we can do it without them, that they'll realize they ought to try to work with us. But we're not going to make the mistake of 2008 and 9.
Everything he said there was accurate, and I can't find a single point that I can disagree with. I just really hope that he remains committed to that message. Because to be sure, and I'll give you the evidence, the Obama economic stimulus plan after the 2008 recession was kind of a disaster when it comes to increasing inequality in the country. Again, I'll give you the evidence for that in just a second. But he was also correct in noting that Democrats and Biden attempted to work with Republicans on this coronavirus relief bill. And remember, Biden wanted to pass a $1.9 trillion bill, and luckily it passed in the Senate, it passed in the House, he's about to sign it. That's good news. What did Republicans offer as their counteroffer to that? Well, Collins is part of a small group of Republicans that met with the White House weeks ago to pitch a $618 billion COVID-19 aid bill. Biden opted to use a special budget process, reconciliation, that can bypass the 60 vote threshold for his larger package. And that was the right way to go about it. Obviously, the relief deal is not perfect. We've been critical of it in some areas, but also we've applauded it in other areas. But John, do you think that this is a real awakening for the Democratic Party? Do you think they realize that they need to move away from austerity politics, but more importantly, stop trying to cave to Republican demands?
I think that on some level they have, but I wonder, like, if Obama is at one end of the spectrum and our desires for what they would do if we were in charge is at the other, what does what he just said actually represent? Like, where are they at? It sounds like he's very close to us, but I wonder if that's actually the case. And you said we'll have to see if they stick to it. I would say we can evaluate the evidence that we have so far, and it's not necessarily yeehaw, he's on our side. Like, and I would also say, in terms of the desire for bipartisanship, the way that bipartisanship has generally been used when we talk about potential legislation, the way it typically is used is Democrats and Republicans teaming up to do something that might well be hated by both the Democratic and Republican bases. Like, regular people might have no interest in it, but if you can get a couple of Democrats, a couple of Republicans, it counts as bipartisan. I would say the stimulus bill that was just passed is a much better bipartisan effort, because it is something that both Democrats and Republicans want to be done. Their elected representatives just don't actually represent their base on that issue. And the duty of the president is not to appeal to Republican politicians. He's supposed to be the president for all Americans. And with this bill, he largely was, because Republican voters like it, even if basically no elected Republicans do. The issue is, though, if you're gonna come out and say, we learned our lessons, we're not gonna be bound to them, well then, Why weren't the checks bigger? You know, why did you cut? Why did you change the targeting threshold and the fall off at the last minute? Why did you cut the total amount going out in unemployment when, again, at this point, they're not even trying to get Republicans on board anymore? Why did you do all of these things if you realize that we need big, bold, blah, blah, blah? Why has Biden not done the student loan debt cancellation, even to the limited extent that he seems to think he's legally allowed to via executive orders? He's not doing that. And of course, there's a minimum wage. So they're doing better than I might have expected, but there's already tons of evidence that they're willing to not necessarily bow down to Republicans. But what our fear is that all of that is bowing down to a couple of Democrats, actually.
Yes.
But it produces the same effect.
Exactly, exactly. So the Kyrsten Sinemas and the Joe Manchins in the Senate, the conservative Democrats who, you know, at least when it comes to this specific debate, were just as good as Republicans in the Senate. And it's incredibly sad to see any type of kowtowing or any type of, you know, effort to appease them. When again, you're right, it's like, it's the most important point to make in this story. When it comes to bipartisanship, that means the electorate overwhelmingly in a bipartisan fashion supporting the legislation. And you're right, Republicans support it, Democrats support it. The upcoming stimulus package, again, which is about to be signed by Joe Biden, is incredibly popular because people need the relief. Bipartisanship isn't about Democrats and Republicans in the Senate singing Kumbaya. No one cares about that. Now, I promised you the aftermath of Obama's package. And remember, Obama was certainly committed to working with Republicans, and it was incredibly frustrating because Republicans only served to obstruct whatever agenda he had. And so Zachary Carter on Huffington Post wrote in detail about what happened following the 2008 economic recession and Obama stimulus that followed. On the policies that mattered most for economic inequality, Obama consistently placed a greater value on public perceptions of bipartisanship cooperation than on actual results. For Obama, the political value of cutting a deal with then Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was more important than raising taxes on many wealthy people, very wealthy people. Barely a year into his presidency, for instance, Obama began publicly championing austerity. Small businesses and families are tightening their belts, he said. The government should too. He created a bipartisan commission to slash the budget deficit and advocated cutting Social Security benefits that disproportionately help the poor. When the Bush tax cuts were set to expire at the start of 2013, Obama intervened to maintain the lower tax rates for people making $250,000 to $450,000 a year. And according to economist Emmanuel Saez from Berkeley, the top 1% of American households received 52% of the economic gains during the Obama years, while everyone else only recovered 2/3 of what they lost in the Great Recession. So I am hoping that Democrats in Congress who were around for that learned their lesson, because that did hurt Obama. I think that it did lead to a working class disdain for the policies that he implemented, and I can't blame them for that. And there's no need why Democrats need to appeal to Republican lawmakers. If they're unwilling to work with Democrats, and they are unwilling to work with Democrats, then Democrats need to do what it takes to flex their muscle and understand their own power, understand the power of having the people behind these popular policies, and they just need to move forward full steam ahead. I understand that there are going to be procedural issues, as we experienced with the $15 an hour minimum wage. But I do think they could have fought a little more aggressively on that.
Yeah. I just want to really fast add a potential test. Rick Scott just tweeted, President Biden needs to start to take the national debt seriously.
Okay, oh, come on.
They care about it now all of a sudden. And the other one was to give you an idea of how popular this legislation actually is. I mean, we've given you the polls and everything, but a senator tweeted this: independent restaurant operators have won $28.6 billion worth of targeted relief. This funding will ensure small businesses can survive the pandemic by helping to adapt their operations and keep their employees on the payroll. That senator was Roger Wicker, Republican, who voted against it. But he sure seems to want to talk about how awesome it is now that it's law. And he wants people to think that he was with it, I guess. I love it.
Not a single Republican voted for it in the Senate. Not a single Republican.
Where's Collins? Where's Collins?
Oh, and then Collins, you're right. I don't really care to hear from Collins, but we should be fair. We should give her an opportunity to respond to what Chuck Schumer had to say. Let's watch.
I thought that Leader Schumer's comments were bizarre. He voted for the same package that I did. President Obama urged me to vote for the stimulus bill that passed that year, and indeed called me afterwards to thank me for my vote. I was one of only three Republicans who joined the Democrats and gave President Obama this victory during the financial meltdown. So for Chuck Schumer, who was intimately involved in the negotiations as the assistant leader, to somehow criticize me for taking the same position that he did is simply bizarre.
She didn't debunk anything that Chuck Schumer said. Chuck Schumer said,
she described
we made
it.
A mistake. Yeah, she described what
That's
he said. And he was right. Yeah, you did vote for Obama's stimulus, which was not enough to help pull average Americans out of poverty. That was caused by banks committing fraud and then trading mortgage-backed securities that were toxic. Okay, that's the point. The stimulus in the Obama era needed to be far more robust, and it wasn't because Democrats made the mistake of trying to appease people like Collins, who still gets represented as a moderate Republican when in reality she's just like the rest of them. She's not really moderate at all. Let's keep it real.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. All right, I guess I said it all. We'll take a break, but when we come back, we have more news to get to, including a crash cover-up in Los Angeles. A young woman lost her life. There's a wealthy person behind this, and seems like there's no justice. Hopefully by covering it, we can push for more justice. Don't miss that story. We got that for you and more when we come back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic. Or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
What's up, everyone? All right, welcome to our first social break of the day. Some fun programming notes. In fact, we're going to start with a fun programming note. Happy Half Hour on TYT is set to air after our postgame show today. So tune in at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on twitch.tv/TYT. Also, if you're a member, you can watch Happy Half Hour as a video on demand whenever you want. So this might be a good opportunity if you're busy to become a member and have access to our archives. You can do that by going to tyt.com/join. Also, Biden will have a primetime address tomorrow and TYT will cover it. He is planning on addressing coronavirus 1 year out. So it's an important issue and we do want to provide coverage for that. So we'll be doing that after the second hour of the show tomorrow. And you can watch that at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at TYT. The postgame will follow at 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. Pacific for members. And you can become a member by going to tyt.com/join. Also, I love updating you guys on the poll results. We've been doing more and more of these polls and it's really interesting to see where you guys stand on these issues. So one of the questions that we asked you this week was, what should we do with the filibuster? And honestly, this was unsurprising to me. 89.5% of you believe that we should do away with the filibuster. 9.9% think that we should reform it. And only 0.7% of you believe that we should leave it as is. The other poll that we had was about, oh man, I knew you guys would disagree with me on this. It was about that story we did in a postgame show regarding a show from the Netherlands called Simply Naked. And it was about body positivity. Adults would walk in and they would, you know, disrobe in front of children. Would you let your kids watch Simply Naked? 57% of you said yes. 43% of you said no. So, all right, cool. But like watching it on TV is different from being in the room. Like my issue was that the adults were in the room. But anyway, let's just move on.
Is that the same as the British show? I think they have that in Britain as well. No, it's not the same? Oh, okay.
No.
I mean, that sounds exactly the same. Okay.
I want to read a few member comments before we run out of time. Recovering Pagan says, when you're a CEO being addressed by Katie Porter, it really is best to limit your responses to yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and please. No, not the whiteboard. Anything but the whiteboard. So true. It's so true. Thule, Katie Porter is kind of like the one teacher that you hoped you would avoid being assigned to an elementary school at the start of the new year, totally, because you knew that slacking off and cruising your way through would not be an option. Absolutely. Mm. One more comment. No more trigonometry. Obama bending over backwards to cater to Republican politicians that hated him while having a super majority in Congress is one of the weakest things I've ever seen. Totally, totally agree. All right, we got to get back to the show. Welcome back to TYT, Anna and John with you. Please like and share this stream. I got to think about incentives to get you guys to do that because it's really, it's an easy way to help the live audience grow. We want to get as many new people to hear the progressive message as possible. So please just take a moment to like and share the stream and it'll help, you know, promote the show and we really, really appreciate it. Now let's move on to a story that might seem out of left field, but I think it is important to cover it because it involves the two-tier justice system and how some people get away with things that the rest of us would not get away with. In late February, 32-year-old Monique Munoz was driving home from work in Los Angeles when a teenager racing a Lamborghini crashed into her and she unfortunately died. Now, the teen sustained moderate injuries and was sent to the hospital. But now Munoz's family is demanding answers about the crash because it seems as though there was some wrongdoing on the part of the 17-year-old racing a Lamborghini. It turns out that this 17-year-old does not have a license, and the district attorney in Los Angeles has not filed any charges. In fact, the Los Angeles Police Department notified the press that they are unaware of whether or not the driver had any drugs or alcohol in their system because they didn't even run a drug test, didn't even do any type of sobriety check. Now, the stepfather for Monique Munoz told KCAL-9, a local affiliate here in Los Angeles, the kids racing down the street in a Lamborghini, 17 years old in a Lamborghini, doing 120 miles per hour, hits and kills her senseless. I want him prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Let me also just remind you all that a new Lamborghini Urus, I think it's called, costs about $250,000. So there's a point to me bringing that up, okay? Because this kid also comes from wealth, and that might play a role into why the district attorney has not filed any charges. Isaac Cardona, the stepfather, also says, who gives a teenager a Lamborghini? We found out last night the teen doesn't even have a license. We know who the kid is. We know who the father is. We're letting the law take care of him. But the unfortunate update to this story is that the law has not taken care of him. So his father is a local millionaire. His name is James Curry. And there's evidence to indicate that he's gone to pretty extreme lengths to bury this story in internet searches. But I'm hoping that by bringing this up on this show, we can get some answers for the family, because it's just absolutely heartbreaking what they've been going through. So, you know, these are images of what the scene looked like. There's another picture kind of showing what her Lexus looked like after it was crashed into. She was actually trapped in the vehicle, but by the time you know, rescue workers got there, she had already died. It's just pretty awful story. And finally, Monique's sister has weighed in on Twitter and said, I lost a sister because a rich, spoiled, privileged individual wanted to raise his fancy Lamborghini. He killed her, and now hiding behind daddy's money. Yes, we're angry. So it is strange that there haven't been any files, you know, charges filed. It doesn't seem like there's been any type of investigation. And if there was a teenager driving without a license, racing a Lamborghini without a license, there certainly should be an investigation and possible charges.
Yeah, I can see in the chat people are talking about affluenza. But the issue is that it would be affluenza if there were charges and they sort of got off easy. We're not even at affluenza yet. We're at nofluenza. There's nothing whatsoever happening. In your intro, you sort of alluded to the two-tier justice system. This isn't even really a two-tier justice system, because the justice system doesn't seem like it's gonna get involved at all. It seems like just no justice whatsoever. And in particular, where you talked about the lack of screening for alcohol or drugs, has there been any explanation given as to why that wouldn't be done? I mean, I'm not a police officer, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but it seems like, especially in a crash that had a major injury, let alone a death, that would be, and involved speeding, that would be the most obvious routine thing that you would do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So already this story is sketchy. The actions by both the authorities and the district attorney, super, super sketchy. There's no question in my mind that if we're talking about someone who has no money, someone who's powerless, someone who doesn't have parents who are wealthy, right? If they're driving without a license and then they're street racing, and that leads to a crash that kills an innocent person driving home from work, let's just keep it real. The person who engages in that behavior would immediately be held accountable, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is a story that makes absolutely no sense. And this crash didn't happen last weekend. This crash happened in mid-February, and there haven't really been any real updates to all of the questions that the family members have right now. And so they've been doing protests in Los Angeles to kind of draw attention to this story. They're planning another one this upcoming weekend in Los Angeles. And the whole point is to get people to pay attention to what happened, because they want justice for their daughter. And look, we obviously haven't done an investigation, so I don't know for sure if all of these allegations are true, but that's the whole point of an investigation. That's the reason why you have a district attorney. He's supposed to look into this and, based on the evidence, decide whether or not it makes sense to file charges. And it appears that there's been absolute negligence in response to this crash. The hashtag justice for Monique Munoz is on Twitter if you want to learn more about this. If you're in the Los Angeles area and you want to be part of that demonstration over the weekend, you can learn more about it there. But it's just a really, really sad story. And we shouldn't have a two-tier justice system based on wealth. And this is just such a brazen example of it.
Yeah, and has it actually been confirmed? I mean, this person didn't have a driver's license. Has it been confirmed that this was like this person's designated vehicle? Is it possible that it was just taken and the parents didn't intend it to or something? Not that matters at the end of the day in terms of justice. But if it is the simplest explanation, which is this was a car that was given by an incredibly wealthy parent to their kid, I sometimes just think that the rich are an entirely different species, and it's impossible to get into their head or imagine why they would do the things that they do. Like, why, even if you didn't care at all for the possibility that your kid, who apparently wants to drive but cares so little about the process that they don't even get a license, that they might kill someone else, wouldn't you worry that in their Lamborghini they might kill themselves or destroy the Lamborghini? I just don't understand it. It's impossible for me to get into certain people's heads.
I just don't think there's a lot of logic going on with people who would be willing to spend $250,000 on a car. Maybe I'm being unfair. I don't know. I know people like cars, but yeah, I don't know. That's why you have an investigation to figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the family hasn't gotten that, and that's the issue. So I think we can get to the next story. Let's do it. And this story was unexpectedly something that led me down a rabbit hole, because I really wanted to understand what was going on behind it. But you may have noticed Taylor Lorenz, trending on social media. I want to tell you why. Tucker Carlson had one of his typical temper tantrums after New York Times culture reporter and tech reporter Taylor Lorenz tweeted about women enduring harassment on International Women's Day. Now, her tweet said this, and it seems pretty uncontroversial if you ask me. For International Women's Day, please consider supporting women enduring online harassment. It's not an exaggeration to say that the harassment and smear campaign I've had to endure over the past year has destroyed my life. No one should have to go through this. Now, pay close attention to that timeline there, because she references something, and I wanted to learn more about what she's referencing. And I'm going to give you all the details on that in just a moment. But before I do, here's Tucker Carlson losing it.
The most powerful people claiming to be powerless. Taylor Lorenz, for example, writes for the New York Times. She's at the very top of journalism's repulsive little food chain. Lorenz is far younger than prominent New York Times reporters used to be. She's also much less talented. You'd think Taylor Lorenz would be grateful for the remarkable good luck that she's had, but no, she's not. Just this morning, she tweeted this, quote, "For International Women's Day, please consider supporting women enduring online harassment. It's not an exaggeration to say that the harassment and smear campaign I've had to endure over the past year has destroyed my life." Destroyed her life, really? By most people's standards, Taylor Lorenz would seem to have a pretty good life. One of the best lives in the country, in fact. Lots of people are suffering right now, but no one's suffering quite as much as Taylor Lorenz is suffering. People have criticized her opinions on the internet, and it destroyed her life. Let's pause on this International Women's Day and recognize that. You thought female Uyghurs had it bad. You haven't talked to Taylor Lorenz.
Yep, she made all of those claims.
She said she's suffering more than anyone else. None of that. She's just making a point about how harassment has impacted her and how, hey, maybe consider supporting women who have gone through similar things. It shouldn't be a difficult, controversial thing to digest. But of course, for people like Tucker Carlson, who was handed his wealth on a silver platter as like a Swanson heir, you know, he has thoughts. Okay, this guy has thoughts on how powerful other people are, how talented other people are. I mean, homeboy can't have a single interview without looking as if he's the most confused person on the planet. Okay, all he does is spread propaganda and ridiculous pro-corporate, by the way, talking points, which is part of the story, and I'll get to that in a minute. But John, why don't you go off before I go off more?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say that I'm going to track down wherever that particular B-roll file is being stored, and I'm going to delete it. And I'm going to track down every copy that's ever been made. I'm going to delete it because I don't want to see that anymore. But anyway, you rightly pointed out that, of course, he's what, 100 times wealthier than her, 500 times wealthier than her. But she's the luckiest. He hasn't been lucky. He wasn't just lucky to be born into a family that could provide him with everything he'd ever want. She's the lucky one. There's probably very few people watching this that watch Tucker Carlson because they like him. But if there's literally any of you there, were the things that he's saying actually reflective of anything she had said from the beginning of? Did she claim that she has it worse than the Uyghurs? Did she do that? Did she say that she has it worse than literally everyone? If
you mentioned the Uyghurs. Does anyone actually think that Tucker Carlson cares about the persecution of Muslims in China? You guys really think, does anyone actually buy that? Like, doesn't anyone get disgusted with the fact that these goons use humans as props for their little political talking points? And I'm sorry, John, I hate being interrupted, and I interrupted you. So go ahead.
You're allowed to. It's your show. He might care 1% because the persecution is being done by the Chinese and he'd like a reason to hate them more. But that's probably the beginning and the end of his caring about it. He said that she is one of the most powerful people in the country. That was at the beginning of the segment. Do you need to watch any more than that? Is she one of the most powerful people in the world? What does that make him in that case? She does great work. She gets on the front page sometimes. She's a style reporter that also, by the way, and I'm only saying this because she has in fact said it. They keep trying to infantilize her by implying that she's like 15 years old when she's not at all. And it's a really weird thing that they do. But you should understand that, of course, in addition to some of the great research that you've done that you will describe, you will be shocked to find out that there's quite a bit of just misogyny here that perhaps is leading to a little bit of this. And so I certainly have more that I want to say, but you did some great work. So why don't we get to that?
Yeah, so I wanted to, instead of just reacting, I wanted to actually understand what she was referring to. And I want to be clear about something. I had seen some of her tweets in the past. I don't follow her work too closely. But I mean, she referenced something in her tweet, right? Over the last year. And I'm like, okay, well, what happened over the last year? And I was asking around about that and no one really had an answer. So then I started digging a little deeper to figure out what it is. And what she was referring to is this very targeted campaign against her as a result of reporting that she had done and social media posts that she had put out in regard to the former CEO of a company known as Away, right? Her name is Steph Corey. And employees of that company were basically sharing with reporters that they were in an abusive, hostile work environment under Corey's leadership. And so there's actually extensive reporting about this. Corey would demand that everyone work 12 to 16 hours a day. If the workers refused to do that, they would be accused of not being committed enough. I mean, just the typical stuff that you would expect from these type of Silicon Valley CEOs. And the employees were sick of it, and so they reached out to reporters. The Verge wrote about this, Vice wrote about this, and Taylor Lorenz had been tweeting about it and posting about it on social media. Now, there's this new app, right, called Clubhouse, and it's an invite-only app. Last year in the summer, there had been a conversation among venture capitalists. And she was in the room as the conversation was happening. And at one point she left. When she left, they started basically attacking her and accusing her of being some sort of warrior on social media, but not really having the courage to stand up to them during that meeting. And the reason why she left is because one of the venture capitalists in particular had already been pretty vicious to her on social media. And so she just decided to leave the room. But Vice had obtained audio of that entire meeting, which you can listen to. And the way that these venture capitalists make themselves out to be the victims, they were worried about cancel culture, right? Because this is what happened. There's this female CEO who's obviously mistreating her workers. It gets reported on, it spreads on social media. And all of these venture capitalists who are invested in companies that might also run into these types of issues are worried. So they're worried about cancel culture. They're worried about, you know, maybe not getting the type of return on their investments that they would like as a result of CEOs being abusive to their workers, those stories getting reported. It's all out there, guys. All you need to do is scratch the surface and get off Twitter and stop listening to people who want to make everything about how, oh, this is victim culture and this is cancel. Cancel culture is real. I've been critical of it. This is not an example of it. Let me give you more. So, by the way, Lorenz had claimed that people have attacked or attempted to hack into her accounts, to change her passwords, sent her vicious, disgusting threats, trolled her on Clubhouse by changing their profile pics to those of her public antagonists, and set up Twitter accounts to impersonate her. Listen, I've dealt with all of this, and I know what it's like to have a relentless hacker come after you and not give up. It's like whack-a-mole. I dealt with it in 2020. I had to change my phone number as a result. It's an isolating, awful thing to go through. You feel violated. Our entire lives are online. I was thinking about pictures of my nieces. I'm super protective of them. I don't want some terrible person getting a hold of it. I don't take nude pictures, don't take nude videos. There's nothing in my online life that's incriminating for me. But it's a feeling of being violated that's hard to describe to people who haven't experienced it. You're worried about your bank accounts, all of that stuff. So I sympathize with her on that. But again, at the heart of this whole Taylor Lorenz, you know, hate is the fact that she called out that female CEO. So following Lorenz's criticisms, Silicon Valley, you know, venture capitalists have that meeting on Clubhouse. And now I go to Vice's reporting on it. They write that entrepreneur or businessman, Balaji Srinivasan, several Anderson Horowitz venture capitalists and television personality Roland Martin spent at least an hour talking about how journalists have too much power to cancel people and wondering what they, the titans of Silicon Valley, could do about it. Audio of their conversation was leaked to Vice, and in Vice's report, the exclusive users of Clubhouse on the call seemed to conceive of themselves as humble citizens preyed upon by corrupted elites, cravenly lusting after money and power. This reached a bizarre apogee when Srinivasan boasted of standing up for the CEO of a scandal-plagued luggage brand, depicting her as all but powerless because of her relatively low Twitter follower count. And so they wanted to discuss ways to basically punish journalists who hold these types of CEOs to account. Nate Jones, for instance, who's one of the venture capitalists on that call, said this: how can there be accountability function that's impenetrable across all media that allows for that to happen, that pushback to happen without it being turned around, and can become some toxic thing where all types of power dynamics are being used and people have their weapons out? So again, like, the whole point is, oh, this type of reporting hurt our friend who was forced to step down as co-CEO of this luggage company. What can we do about it? And by the way, Corey initially stepped down following an investigation by The Verge in December of 2019, which highlighted employee concerns over Corey's management style. Employees on the customer experience team felt particularly overworked and undervalued and took issue with the way Corey spoke to them. And, you know, let me give you one example that was reported by The Verge. In one colorful anecdote, Corey told a group of customer experience employees she was going to stop approving their paid time off and work from home requests to teach them the skill of accountability. Everything on their Slack channel, by the way, was public and intentionally so in order to, and all of their evaluations, all of the employees' evaluations were intentionally made public, which of course can be humiliating and awful. And so this is all being reported on. And these guys are livid about it. And so all of this stuff happening in response to Taylor Lorenz is fueled by this hatred toward reporters who hold people in positions of power and privilege accountable. And no one's like digging into that at all. Everyone's just making this about like cancel culture good or cancel culture bad. No, guys, there are powerful people.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
People behind this, and don't let them fool you. Don't let them manipulate you. That's exactly what's happening right now.
But no, that couldn't be it, because Tucker's a populist and he wants to rein in the elites, especially the tech elites and all of that. So it couldn't be that. No. Wait, is it really that? Is he in fact co-opting the language of populism and holding the elites accountable to pretend that he in fact, while trying to theoretically, if it's not just misogyny, then it's what you're saying, attacking her and claiming that he is the one that is holding the powerful accountable, because presumably Taylor Lorenz is more powerful than VCs and CEOs of major corporations and all of that, and certainly more powerful than Tucker Carlson, who against all rationality has the largest audience of like any show on TV. The entire thing is just disgusting. And by the way, while we're rightfully focusing on him, he is not the only person that has like lost their mind about her and is just tweeting nonstop. I'm gonna keep it real. Michael Tracy, tons of tweets about her. Glenn Greenwald, tons of tweets about her. And it's not the first time. Like every couple weeks or every month or so, they circle back to, we gotta post a whole bunch of tweets about her, and then we gotta put out something on Substack. It's totally not about making money though. We just believe in holding people accountable. Now subscribe to my Substack and see me talk about how this woman is unacceptable for some reason that I won't actually define, which is the final point I wanna make. You explained why some people might have a problem with her. Did Tucker ever explain what the issue with her is? Because
no, but
the only thing he cited, only thing he cited was her tweet saying, hey, I'd prefer not to be harassed. If that was it, he might think, well, I think she's exaggerating because he doesn't care about the harassment that women suffer, which is why he pitched it as just her being criticized rather than death threats and all that. But how would that be the justification for an entire segment on his show that she tweeted in a way that made her the victim that he doesn't believe she is? That definitely wouldn't justify a whole segment on his show. So what does? I don't know. He didn't list anything about her that was worthy of criticism. All of them are just saying we should be able to criticize her. We won't say for what, because we don't want to get into the actual substance of it. We just think that you should be able to criticize her. And we definitely want to make our like 99% male audience incredibly comfortable with the idea of having a 2 or 20 or 3 day hate against this woman.
Look, the right wing is turning this story into what they do best, a culture war story. This is not a culture war story. On the surface, it might appear to be a culture war story, but beneath the surface, if you just dig a little bit, it's a story about power and privilege wanting to crush a journalist who dared to draw attention to their awful practices toward workers. And I'm gonna leave you with two quotes because it's important. And it comes from a former worker from Away. That was the company that that co-CEO had to step down from because she was so vicious to her employees. "We don't have a lot of money or the name recognition that the founders and the venture capitalists do," says a former Away employee. They added that no CEO, male or female, should be able to treat workers poorly, a reference to the argument that male leaders aren't held to the same standards. The CEO, the worker continues to say, got to where they were playing the game and now they're getting called out for mistreatment. So yes, for years, men have been doing the same things. But what makes it okay for men to do this? That was the girl boss promise that women would do it better, but they didn't. And the biggest piece of irony here is that Steph Corey, the CEO, who had to step down from Away, complained that she was being unfairly targeted by journalists because she's a female CEO. Anyway, we are gonna take a break. Just be skeptical of narratives that come across on Twitter. Again, just do a little more digging and inform yourselves because you don't wanna be manipulated by the very people that we're trying to fight back against. Gotta take a break. When we come back, Lauren Boebert is still stupid, still in Congress. We got a story about it. See you there. Welcome to our social break. I'm gonna read one member comment and then move on to super chats. Salam writes in and says that there is a first time disagreement with me. This will rank as the first time disagreement with Anna on wearing masks after you received the vaccine. I got the vaccine, but choose to wear the mask to eliminate getting into arguments, but also to support the ones that have to wear theirs. God bless you. I mean, I don't disagree with that. No, I mean—
What are you, Rand Paul?
We briefly spoke, no, I mean, obviously I'm pro mask, but we briefly spoke about the new CDC guidelines regarding mask wearing after you've been vaccinated. And so those are the guidelines. I mean, I was just repeating the guidelines. But if you wanna keep wearing your mask, do you, boo? There ain't no hate here. I'm in favor of that. That's cool. Let's move on to super chats. Peter Hamby writes in and says, "I'm sorry, Anna and John, but saying something is normal, like a normal day, doesn't exist. There's no normal, there's average. Is today an average day?" I would say today's better than average. I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah, sure.
I'm here with my friends. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ethan writes in and says, "A big oil hoarder crossed Katie Porter and found that his lies wouldn't fly. He was caught in a bind when she took back her time and told rich fools their actions won't fly." I love poetry. It's very good.
Wait,
who said that? That's Ethan.
Oh, nice. I love our poets. Yeah.
I know, it's so good. Mark Bugs writes in and says, "TYT fam, we need to let this story be known. Lambo accident. Get on Twitter. The book and Graham and blow this story up so much that there's a public outcry. This is unacceptable and very heartbreaking." I mean, that's my hope. I know it's a local story out of Los Angeles, but I can't imagine losing a family member like that and then getting absolutely no justice or no investigation in return.
Can I give credit to, it was Edwin that raised that story to me actually.
All right, thank you, Edwin. For Bezila says, in regard to the mandatory substance test, I need to correct the kid doesn't have to submit a drug or alcohol test. As someone who has a DUI and works at a law firm, I can confirm that you don't need to. If he refused the screening, he would get arrested for refusal.
But it doesn't sound like that happened either.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't seem like they tried to. You get what I'm saying? Like they didn't even think to test him. That's the problem. Okay. And God, we have so much time left. What are we going to do? I think we're going to read more comments. All right. Scrolling up to someone who likes Bernie Sanders. John, the suspect wasn't a black man killed by police. So, okay. So there was no need for a drug or alcohol test. Proud member of Squirrel Squad says it. Tucker Carlson. if the viewers of Tucker Carlson are doing harassment, I am climate scientist and it is bad how they treat male scientists, but the harassment of female scientists is disgusting. Yeah. Totally. All right, we got to get back to the show. Thank you for writing in, guys. We'll see you in just a minute. Welcome back to TYT, Anna Kasparian and John Iadarola with you. I was about to just jump into our next story, but it's because I'm so excited to do it. No, I'm actually not. I can't stand this person. But let's talk about the latest political ad coming from Representative Lauren Boebert. So right winger Lauren Boebert, who unfortunately is still in Congress, despite the fact that she's unfit to be in it, has decided to put out a new political ad. Keep in mind that she's one of these Republican lawmakers who's been crying and whining about having to go through metal detectors or having to leave her gun at home before going to the House floor. But she has decided to further put out violent messaging through this latest ad. I don't want to give too much away. Let's take a look at what she had to say there.
I'm Lauren Boebert, a mom, a small business owner, a defender of freedom. Here's what I know. You protect what you love. President Trump built a big, beautiful wall because he loves America. And he wanted to secure our country and protect us from drugs, illegal aliens pouring into our communities, and sex traffickers. Democrats, they fought him every step of the way. And now, welcome to Fort Pelosi, where Democrats decry walls from within their own heavily guarded razor wire wall. Democrats don't want to protect you because they don't care about you, but they'll spare no expense protecting themselves.
We will not build a wall. No,
there will not be another foot of wall constructed in my administration.
I'm not for a wall.
It's time to cut the crap and remember, this is the people's house. Madam Speaker, tear down this wall.
So cool. Obviously the gunshot noise at the very end is ruffling some feathers for obvious reasons. I also find it interesting that she did give a nod to conspiracy theorists in that ad as well. And Lauren Boebert is known for flirting with right-wing conspiracies herself. So that only makes sense. John, what do you think about this? Big deal, not a big deal?
That was terrible. Like, was it better or worse than the Crenshaw thing? I don't know. But man, they all want to be so cool, so bad. And I don't know how to be cool, clearly. But I have learned that being incredibly try hard is not a good starting off point. This is just screaming, think that I'm cool. Like they want to be like a member of the squad. The thing is, do the members of the squad have cool ads? Yes, they do. But they also work and they know things. These are important characteristics as well. The gun thing is ridiculous. JR said this morning on the Damage Report that she ends all of her videos with the gun thing, which I don't think that that's better. I think that's just a different terrible thing than it only being in one. Maybe it's worse actually, since it's in all of them. But also, like, everything is so bad faith in this country. She is trying to present to her followers that the Democrats were against Trump's attempt to build a wall along our entire southern border because they're generally against walls. I don't want walls in this room, basically. I just want to have open holes with ceilings floating above them. No, that's not true at all. The Capitol was actually attacked. We could have a debate about how long the wall should be there, but at least was attacked. If there were actual armies invading across the border, if a wall was an actual solution that wasn't stupid in that context and incredibly expensive, we might support it. There's other reasons other than not liking the concept of walls that the Democrats were against that particular big, beautiful wall that she's claiming he built, even though he mostly didn't.
No, he didn't. He didn't build a wall. He totally reneged on that. He did spend quite a bit of money on building a portion of fencing, rebuilding a portion of fencing. What I also find really interesting about all of this is just like, so she says, look, do you guys remember when Nancy Pelosi and Representative Ocasio-Cortez were publicly feuding? Right, like they were like trading barbs. You had Nancy Pelosi give an interview to the New York Times where she was pretty salty toward AOC. And the reason why AOC was upset with Nancy Pelosi and more importantly, Democratic leadership was because they were willing to hand over $4 billion for border security. It was a blank check to Donald Trump. And I don't know where that money went because clearly he didn't actually use it for the border wall, which I'm not complaining that he didn't actually build that wall, but I'm just saying that lots of mismanagement happening with the Trump administration. And this is why Democrats should never concede to Republicans. Like why did Nancy Pelosi do that? Why did they agree to do that? Why did they hand over that money? So it's one lie after the next ends with a gunshot. And that's America, folks. Like that's the Republican Party. Obviously that ad doesn't appeal to us, but it's not for us. I think the problem is that kind of ad does appeal to a significant portion of our electorate. And it's worrying because they love the violent imagery. They love the violent rhetoric. They love immediately deflecting when they engage in any violence themselves by blaming it on, you know, made up groups. It's exactly what we got after the, you know, insurrectionists causing all that violence on January 6th. Like, oh, it wasn't them. It wasn't the Trump supporters. It was Antifa. Never take responsibility. Never acknowledge the right-wing extremism that's been taking place in this country that's actually led to people getting killed. It's led to mass shootings. It's led to Walmarts getting shot up by Trump supporters who bought into the fear-mongering about immigrants. It's these people exist. They're here and they love that kind of ad. Yeah. And that's really the worrying stuff.
Yeah, I don't doubt at all that they'll love it. Although I would ask any fan of Lauren Boebert in the audience, you're a conservative, not because you love the xenophobia and racism and homophobia and misogyny. That's not true. You're a conservative because you have economic anxiety and the Democrats have abandoned you. Only the Republicans actually get your concerns. And where were those concerns echoed in that ad? Did she say anything about the fact that your job went away or the fact closed down, or you don't have insurance, or your kids can't go to school, or you might lose your house? Any of that? Are you worried about retirement? Is she addressing any of the issues that you swear to God are the things that motivate your political behavior and not just fear-mongering, racism, and a mixture of hates and jealousies? Because the ad seems to think you're the one you say you're not. And the one that you say that you are, a person who's motivated by actual economic concerns that those damn libs can't understand, she's not trying to appeal to that person.
All right, John, thank you so much for hosting with me. Everyone, go check out The Damage Report. It's one of the best shows that you can keep up with, just so you know what's going on with politics. John, you want to do a quick plug before you go?
Yeah, please watch The Damage Report. It's one of the best shows if you want to keep up with politics. We have a lot of fun. Bridget Todd's going to be on tomorrow, and Brett's on Fridays, and we throw people in the trash. And based on this episode of The Young Turks, it's going to be a fierce competition for Garbage People of the Week. So we're going to see how it goes.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you, John. And everyone else, please stick around. When we come back, Nando Vila will be joining me for hour two. And we have some international news to share with you. See you there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.